You're listening to Gateway 97.8. It's Drive Time with me, Johnny, and I'm delighted to be joined by Kate Bingham, who is the head of the UK Coronavirus Vaccine Task Force, leading the way, really, in our fight against coronavirus. Kate, thanks so much for talking to me today. The government has made this deal to get early access to 90 million doses of a potential coronavirus vaccine. But it is possible, isn't it, that we may not find a successful jab?
Yes, it is possible. Thank you for having me. So what we don't know is whether or not it is ever possible to create a vaccine against coronavirus. We don't have any vaccine against any coronavirus, so it's not clear that this is going to be possible. And if you think about HIV and malaria, we know lots about those diseases, but we don't have any vaccines against them. So the first caution is it may not be possible. But the good news is we are starting to see some positive data, which gives us some grounds of optimism. So the data that came out from Oxford showed that the individuals who'd had two doses of the Oxford vaccine generated antibodies which were able to kill 100% of the live COVID virus in a test tube. It doesn't take us to the point of knowing, is this vaccine going to work? But at least it's a very encouraging step along the way.
That is encouraging, and we'll get on to the Oxford vaccine in a moment. But if that doesn't work, and if we don't find a vaccine, what do we do? How do we learn to live with the virus?
Then we'll have to do what we do with malaria and HIV, which is to have a combination of different therapeutics that stop the infection being too serious. So now HIV is perfectly livable with a well-managed therapeutic set of cocktail of drugs, and that may be what we'll have to do in this case. But so far, I'm not throwing the towel in. I'm still hoping that we're going to be able to find a vaccine, even if it's not a sterilizing vaccine. And so what that means is, like our childhood vaccines, if you have that vaccine, it means you won't get infected from that disease, like MMR, for example, but measles, mumps, rubella. But it may be that we find a vaccine that actually can just reduce the severity of symptoms, so it can stop people from dying. So instead of people, this being a lethal disease, maybe we can make it a bad disease, but not lethal, and then we can control the rest with therapeutics. So that's what I think is a potential option.
And we heard on Monday about the successful early stages of the Oxford University vaccine trial. Just how significant is this?
It's very significant, because without it, we can be pretty sure, if we didn't see that sort of data, we could be pretty sure the vaccine wouldn't work. But knowing that individuals who've had the vaccine can generate an immune response that can kill the live COVID virus, that's incredibly important. But as I said, we don't know whether or not that's enough to be able to protect us from this infection.
There has been some discussion that once people have had the virus, they're immune for a certain amount of time, and then they could be susceptible to getting it again. Is that something that you see?
We don't know the answer. What we do see is that people who've had the virus, we see their antibodies drop off quite quickly, and also variably. So we don't understand why some people's antibodies stay higher than others. And it doesn't seem to be related directly to the extent of the infection. So the answer is we don't know. And actually, further clinical studies are being planned to explore those very people to see if they've been exposed to the virus or they've had the infection. Are they then more immune to a second infection? But we don't know that yet.
And assuming that Oxford trial is successful, of course, we all hope it is, what would be the timeline between now and getting a jab?
So we won't know successful until they complete the study. And at the moment, they've only vaccinated their 9,000-10,000 people with one injection so far. So they need to do the second injection, which I'm assuming they will do. They have not made that decision yet, but based on that data, that would be the natural conclusion that they would do. So that may take months, or it may be quick. The challenge is, they can't show it's effective until they have a statistical difference between those people who've had the vaccine versus those people who haven't. And of course, if nobody is exposed to the virus, we can't show that difference because there's not enough people getting sick. So that is, the social distancing has been wonderful to reduce the levels of viral transmission, but it's not been particularly helpful for running clinical trials. But let's say they do get exposed to enough virus over the next 2 or 3 months, then they have to go to the regulator, which is the European Medicines Agency, and the MHRA, which is here, the Medicines Health Products Regulatory Agency, and they will go with that data and say, do you now believe this is safe and effective Would you register this for use under a emergency authorization? And if the answer is yes, then we will have vaccine starting to be ready by the end of this year, so that we are manufacturing now before we know whether or not this vaccine is going to work. And so if everything aligns, we could have start vaccinating people by the end of the year. But Johnny, one thing you need to realize is not everybody is going to get vaccinated. So in this country, we have a committee of experts who define the vaccination policy. That's nothing to do with me. And these are brilliant vaccinologists who will advise the government on who should get vaccinated. And so what they have suggested so far in their preliminary guidance is the elderly would be vaccinated, and their definition of elderly is anyone above the age of 50. And then they have advised certain groups between 18 and 50 who should also be vaccinated, and that includes people with comorbidities, so other serious diseases, so type 2 diabetes or heart disease, people who in frontline workers, because they're clearly getting exposed to disease, and also ethnic minorities, because we don't know why ethnic minorities are getting disproportionately affected by this virus, but they do seem to be. So those are the different groups that the JCVI have recommended should be prioritised for vaccination. And so that's my guess is what the government will do.
So we're talking about people on the front line, perhaps people that are shielding at the moment, and people really who are more susceptible to die from this virus when you look at the data. But surely the aim, you know, looking forward, is that everyone in the society has the protection against coronavirus.
Yes, we don't need to necessarily vaccinate everybody to protect the population. So we have to protect the vulnerable, and we have to protect the vulnerable globally. So this isn't a matter of just, you know, we sort ourselves out and let everybody else sort them, other different countries sort their citizens out. We have to be responsible for helping to ensure that the successful vaccines are actually distributed internationally, so that all countries can vaccinate their vulnerable populations. So that is definitely a global and a well-coordinated effort. I mean, we are doing well, actually, with proper international collaboration. And ultimately, if the vaccines are shown to be safe and effective, yes, they could ultimately vaccinate the entire population. And you'll have seen in our announcement with Valneva, which is the Scottish plant that is making the whole inactivated virus. It's a sort of rather old-fashioned type of vaccine, but it's one that we know as a format works really well. That one, what we've done is we've bought enough doses now for the target population, but we also have an option with them to buy more doses if it's safe and effective, so then we could vaccinate the rest of the adult population. But it's not likely that people below the age of 18 are going to be vaccinated anytime soon, because the clinical trials have not been focused on those people, because largely they've not been suffering. But if there's good evidence to show that, say, adolescents are key contributors to asymptomatic transmission, then I think there would be a good argument for running trials in that age group and then exploring to see whether or not it would make sense to vaccinate them.
You've been pretty clear that this so-called vaccine nationalism isn't going to work, and we need to cooperate with countries all over the world. But you look to places like America, where President Trump says, no, we're going to get it across America, America first. Does that worry you that if other countries may find a vaccine and they don't share it?
It worries me, but that's actually just not the way that the industry and the vaccine companies are behaving. So I think you've got politicians on one side, and just to be clear, I'm not a politician. I have no dog in the game here. But actually, the way the companies are behaving, we are talking to US companies, and we are agreeing how we want to vaccinate the people in the UK, and also agreeing how we want successful vaccines to be distributed internationally. So, yes, there's lots of rhetoric, and we need to be careful and all of that. But I think the UK, we need to step up and make it clear that we are going to be good global citizens and make sure that the best vaccines get to the people who need it around the world.
It's pretty clear that this process is moving faster than a normal vaccine trial would. How can we be sure that it's safe and thorough?
That's a great question, Johnny. So there is no shortcut in the safety standards that are being applied to any of the clinical trials. What's happening, and the reason we're being able to do these studies more quickly than normal, is we're compressing the different steps of the clinical trials. So instead, normally what would happen is you'd wait for example, the phase one study to read out and look at that data before you then move into the next stage. And we're not doing that. We're basically, as soon as we're establishing that the vaccine is safe, we're then moving straight ahead as fast as we can into the bigger studies. So the fact that Oxford only released their data on their phase one would normally mean then you'd start off with your phase two. But in fact, they've already vaccinated almost all their phase three patients. So they're big efficacy patients because they've been able to, they started that before they even knew the results of phase one. So that's got nothing to do with safety. The safety standards remain as high as they always do, and there is no change to that, and those are governed by the regulatory body. And the MHRA is phenomenal. They're really, really good and very thoughtful and careful. So there's no shortcut in safety, but we are compressing the time, and that's because we've been given the money to do that. Normally that doesn't happen. Normally you're not, you don't get the funding that allows you to do those bigger studies at risk, and we don't get the money to manufacture at risk. So we are manufacturing these vaccines before we know whether they work, so that we will have vaccine ready if any of them do show to work. So that's pretty ballsy, and I think it's the right thing to do, but it is a risk.
And you're encouraging people to sign up and take part in vaccine trials, aren't you?
We are. So what we've discovered over the last few months is that many of the vaccine companies want to come to the UK because to run their big efficacy studies, because we're really good at it. So we have a national health system and we have an infrastructure that enables us to run these studies around the UK. So it's not just England, Scotland, Ireland, Northern Ireland and Wales. We can run these studies well. And you saw the data that came out of the recovery study with dexamethasone. That was a world-changing result to show that using this drug, you can severely reduce the mortality of these sick patients. So we're seeing a lot of inbound interest. Many of these are the vaccines we ourselves want to secure rights to. And they're coming to the UK and said, how quickly can you get our studies started? And the answer is, this is where we need the public's help to join in and join the fight back against COVID by volunteering to join in with the studies. So we've created a page on the NHS website, which is nhs.uk/coronavirus. And there's a place where you can register interest to learn more about the coronavirus vaccine studies. And so I would encourage all your listeners today to at least consider whether or not they'd be willing to help us find a solution to this terrible pandemic.
I've signed up, but should I be worried about the risks that could pose to me and my health?
No, because the way the regulators work is nothing goes into people ever before a lot of safety testing is done to establish whether or not these are safe and effective. So that these are, I mean, first of all, it's embedded in law. Nothing can change in terms of the basic fundamental standards of safety that have to be adhered to. And what happens, just so you and your listeners understand, is you tend to start at a very low dose and you then evaluate to see what happens. Then you go up a little bit and then say, well, does anything else happen? And so there's a gradual dose escalation, which is what it's called. And then once you've established a dose where there is no safety issue whatsoever, but you think you're at the dose level that you will trigger the immune response you want to see, that's then the dose that will be chosen for the vaccines. But everything is monitored in every way, incredibly detailed. So it will, you know, it's a time consuming thing. It will involve being involved in trials. Does mean you will need to get your blood test and you'll need to be measured frequently, because that's the whole way that we ensure that safety is paramount in all these studies.
Okay, that website once more, nhs.uk/coronavirus. Kate Bingham, thanks for your time and best of luck with the hunt for a vaccine. We are all right behind you.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Johnny.
You're listening to Gateway 97.8. It's Drive Time with me, Johnny.